welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 471. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today is only bloody Rick Cowley.
Hey.
Explain yourself.
For being alive?
Justify your existence. I've been watching Red Dwarf again. I've been running it through with my partner because she's never seen it before.
I've never seen Red Dwarf.
Oh, actually. Do that. I know we were talking last week about people going, I haven't bloody seen it. But no, do Red Dwarf. It's very good. And it filled this lovely gap when there was no Doctor Who. And they were trying to find a way to greenlight a sci-fi sitcom. But at the same time, BBC was like, sci-fi? That sounds expensive. No. And so they're like, right, it'll just be in one room, basically. It's going to kind of be like Porridge, where they're in prison. But this is two people who hate each other in a room, and there happens to be like stars when you look outside the window. Is that all right? And so it was really good. They made a lot out of the situations. Good characters. Anyway, what's the deal this week? What have we been doing? Oh, yeah, you've been shutting down games. That's a mild spoiler for what's gonna come later in the show. But hey, you like that Westworld game? Well, Rick ruined it for everybody. In addition to that earth-shattering news, we've also got the likes of Odmar appearing on a new platform, a potential 22 new SNES games coming to Switch Online, according to Data Miners, plus new releases, including the likes of Forged Fantasy, Hangline Mountain Climber, Rangers of Oblivion, some stuff on the Switch, and then that's about it. First, the news. One of our favourite games from last year was the gorgeous platformer Odmar, which appeared on iOS only. It follows a little Viking dude who's running around trying to prove his worth to the other Vikings, and it's basically Rayman, but with lovely Viking visuals. It sounds like I'm slagging it off by saying it's, you know, basically Rayman. Rayman's really good, and it's clearly drawn its inspiration from that. But it does it in a really, really good way. It's smooth and glorious and it feels lovely. And it's one of the rare occasions where I'm like, I see what you're doing and I have no objection. Because yum, 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 yum. And it was a premium game as well. And the later Raymans went into that free-to-play territory. And, you know, so great game. Now it's been revealed that it is coming to Android, which is very exciting.
It's on Android.
It's on Android now?
Yeah, it's already been released. You can download it straight away on Google Play.
Blimey, that's even better. Well then, so you can download it for free, but that only gives you the first little bit, doesn't it?
Yes. I don't know how much that is.
Yeah.
They just say nondescript the beginning of the game, and then once you reach the end point, you are allowed to buy the full game for, I think it's $4.99, £4.99.
It would figure that's the same price as it is on the App Store, so
yeah.
Around about that price. Do at least download the free bit at the beginning. It's a lovely little creation, and I think it should have appeared in more awards things at the end of the year for just looking good and being nice. So give it a go. Now, when the NES Classic lineup, was it called the NES line? What was it called on Switch? Those virtual console NES games that came out.
They didn't really come up with a good name for it. I think it was just NES Switch Online.
Oh, okay, right.
Or something like, there's no good word, no good term for this. It's really irritating.
Virtual console on the Wii,
yeah,
didn't it? But
just bring that back. But yeah. No, yes, NES games.
They announced a whole bunch of them and revealed a selection of NES games that were going to come with this Switch Online service, the new subscription they had. And people were like, yeah, all right. They weren't super impressed with the lineup. So some guy called Cappuccino Heck, or some gal called Cappuccino Heck, I don't know. It's a coffee. It could be could go either way.
Believe they are a they.
They are a they. Fair enough. So Cappuccino Heck has apparently been doing a bit of data mining. I don't know where this mining has taken place. Is this rummaging in the back end of the console, or I'm not 100% sure. However, what they've dug up is that there are apparently a list contained of 22 SNES games, which suggests that these are games that are going to appear on the, inverted commas, virtual console, or whatever you want to call it, on the Switch in the not too distant future. And the lineup is kind of good. Actually, looking at it. So, immediate pop-out highlights. Super Mario Kart, bit of a no-brainer there. Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past. Yoshi's Island. We've got Super Mario All-Stars. That's always handy to have all the Mario games, lovely. Kirby's Dream Land 3. Super Metroid. Super Mario World. F-Zero. Everything you'd want, including Star Fox 2. which previously was only available on the SNES Mini, right?
Yeah, but it would make sense that they would then, because the SNES Mini's going out of production, so they could now give people access to the game on a different console and kind of preserve it, which goes against everything Nintendo's ever done before. But it would be really interesting to see them actually put it on there. And obviously, it works on an emulator, so there's no reason it couldn't work on an emulator on Switch. So
yeah, yeah. There was talk about emulator stuff they've data mined here as well, which suggests there might be other emulators, including the NES and the SNES, which makes sense, but also potentially the N64.
Well, it could be anything.
Hmm.
There is no... It's just words at the minute. There's nothing in there that actually says this is an N64 emulator. It could just as easily be something like a Game Boy emulator, which is already on 3DS and stuff like that. It could be a DS emulator for all we know. So it could literally be anything. It just feels like the next step from there would probably be N64.
Yes, I suppose we've worked our way through the NES and the SNES Mini. The PlayStation 1 happened and nobody cared because it wasn't very good. And a SNES could, and the SNES Mini could emulate the PS1 Mini's games better than it could. Yeah, they did this test where they loaded, I think it was Ridge Racer, onto the SNES Mini using its hardware set, and it ran the game at a better frame rate.
Oh my word. That is atrocious. I didn't see that at all.
Yeah, Sony really fumbled the ball with that one. That did not work. So what we're saying here is that there is the potential for all this stuff to happen. It's a little bit vague. We know that. And so, yeah. But there are direct references to these 22 games. So that is something. And it might be a little bit of a salve for those of you who were like, at that NES game list announcement. Perhaps all these ones are going to appear on the console. Frankly, it wouldn't be a surprise. They've always released their old games again on new consoles and then charged you for the privilege. They're very good at saying, here's the game on the Wii, and then here's it on the Wii U, and here's it on the 3DS, and you have to pay every single time for the same game. So it wouldn't be a shock. But again, having it on that screen on the move, that would be nice. I'm not going to complain. And Star Fox 2. I haven't played it. I didn't get a SNES Mini. I am curious to see what it's all about. Now, the Westworld game that was released late last year as well. It wasn't out for a super long time. And when it came out, it was reviewed and we covered it. And we obviously look at the potential sources of inspiration and, you know, what was the game like? And the game was a lot like Fallout Shelter. It had a lot in common with that setup where you had the Westworld overworld up top with the saloons and the cowboys and the cowgirls and everybody mooching about. And then underneath the ground, like in Fallout Shelter, instead of there being a shelter, there was the Delos complex, which was controlling it all. And you were flitting between the two. So, you know, fairly upfront similarities. So similar with the similarities that Warner Brothers got sued by Bethesda for, well, copying inverted commas or having far too many similarities to their game, Fallout Shelter. I didn't realize this at the time, but so one of the articles that you wrote, Rick, where you pointed out, hey, you know, Westworld's come out and it looks a bit like Fallout Shelter. So this article was then used as evidence in that lawsuit.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
How did you find that out?
So it was when I was on the biz side of things. So it's before I even started at PG UK, Pocket Gamer, where so it was when it was very first announced, I was looking at it and I said, it appears to be, I think the exact quote is, it appears to be much in the same vein as Fallout Shelter, because it looked to have the same mechanics and stuff, and it was being developed by Behavior Interactive, who did Fallout Shelter.
Yeah.
And then the lawsuit came up, and I think I was still on biz at the time, and we tend to try and dig into these lawsuits to see exactly what's going on. And I was just scrolling through and then saw, like, just a reference. It's like, as Pocket Gamer stated, and then a quote directly lifted from my article. Just saying, it appears to be much in the same vein as Fallout Shelter. And I was like, oh, no. Well, not again, because this has happened before.
Hang on. We'll cover this bit first, and we'll loop back to that. As a result of this, there was a lawsuit. The lawsuit was then settled, apparently. We don't know what the settlement was. But this week we had an announcement saying that the game is being pulled from all app stores. You can no longer make in-app purchases. And we're sorry, but, you know, it's all being taken down. So there is no more Westworld Mobile, it seems. Now, we don't know if taking down the game was part of that lawsuit settlement, but it would sort of make sense.
Mm.
if we're inferring it suddenly vanished. I don't have strong feelings either way on this, because it wasn't like I was a huge fan of the game or anything. I do find the cloning culture that is hanging about and has been particularly prevalent on mobile. Let's go back and cite things like Ridiculous Fishing, Lambeer's game getting cloned before the official one was even released.
Yeah.
And again, if we talk about games that are inspiration, we have to be careful about our language with this stuff, because we're not saying that these games are definitely cloned. In the case of the Lambeer one, it was quite clear cut that they'd copied it. But you also look at games that are massively inspired by other games that then go on to be more successful. One example of which is 2048, coming off the back of Threes, where Threes was this fantastic game, and then someone went, I will very quickly knock out a version that's free on Android, and it became the big hit, and Threes got left by the wayside, which is a shame. You can blame consumer culture for it and the rules of the marketplace and all that kind of stuff, and Threes might have been a great game, but they got the price tag wrong, so, you know, that's how it goes. But at the same time, there's just something in my heart that feels a bit like, about it all. And one game is successful, and then a billion things that are clearly just exactly the same pop up.
See, the thing I would argue against that in terms of this game is that Behaviour Interactive developed it themselves. And yes, it's a different publisher and a different franchise and stuff, but they haven't gone out and, you know, stolen the idea from somebody else. And I don't say, you know, they haven't been accused of stealing an idea from somebody else.
No.
But they are the developer. And yeah, I guess, you know, we do want to see more differences in the games. And I feel Westworld was slightly different from Fallout Shelter. It seemed a bit more involved, but...
It was different.
But I agree that as a sort of ruling to maybe dissuade people from, in the future, lifting their ideas wholesale from other games, it could be helpful in that regard. The main concern, however, which I don't think I properly revealed, is that one of the big problems in the lawsuit was that Bethesda claimed that Behaviour had reused code from Fallout Shelter.
Oh.
Which is all under copyright with Bethesda, because it's all their game, technically. So that was the main problem with the lawsuit, is that they had apparently stolen code. And you could see this from the fact that it had the same bugs in it that Fallout Shelter had.
Oh, I see.
So there were some concerns other than it looks a lot like it.
Yeah, yeah.
There was other problems. But it is funny to say that I shut down a game by offhandedly saying it looks a bit like another game.
Which is overstating it, because obviously we weren't the only people to make this observation. It was clear to everyone. But it was, entertaining. So, looping back, what was the other game? Where did this happen before?
I can't remember. I've in my youth of a writing career, have just sort of brazenly said, this game looks a lot like this other game, and then people have gone, hang on a minute, he's right there, and they'll use it as evidence in their lawsuits and stuff. I honestly can't remember what the other game was. It was probably something like Asphalt 9 or something. I don't remember.
Just going around torching studios to the ground with your casual observations. You maniac.
It is slightly worrying that how quickly people will just use even a throwaway sentence in a lawsuit. You know.
Well, everyone just grabs onto everything now.
It's a reminder that our words have impact as well.
Yeah. And everyone's disturbing. It was a mixture of things. It's like the people who actually are in positions to critique things perhaps have a platform, you know, to do that, and people will notice it more and perhaps pay attention more. But then there's the opposite case, whereas I see so many people being cited, their tweets on like the BBC and other places, and it's like, well, so and so from West Ham says this, and it's like used as evidence or used as this is representing a movement or something, and you look at it and it's like, that's clearly a bot with 6 followers, the BBC. That's not representing a side of the argument. That's nothing. So they're pulling quotes from everywhere, and sometimes it might be grounded, and sometimes it's complete nonsense. It's like the quotes can be as compelling or as absolute cobblers, depending on which source you're using. So I'm always a bit skeptical of it. Still, if you were Westworld fanses, and you've managed to get through season 2 while still being a fan of Westworld,
I watched the first series. I didn't bother with the second.
No. I quite liked the first season, despite it being cold. And then the second one just got very oblique for its own sake. And yeah, I think people fell off a bit. Maybe they'll put it back with the third, but it won't be accompanied by a Fallout Shelter. Did I say Fallout Shelter? Whoops. By a Westworld mobile game update. Finally, before the new releases, the Escapists games have done fairly well over on other platforms, and apparently we're going to be having The Escapist 2 coming to iOS and Android January 31st. Now, we've already got the first one, haven't we?
Yes.
So 2017, it turned up on both the mobiles. This is the breakout game where you're in prison, you're managing the thing, and then you have to try and get out. And you're supposed to be like obeying the prison rules and whatnot. You have to take your character in and make sure that they arrive on time and that they attend all the little meetings that they should attend and talk to other people. And then eventually you're planning an escape, getting tools in place and all that business. I'm pulling from the article you've written here, but I just realized I've totally reviewed this first game. As I'm saying it, it's like, this is all coming back to me. Why does this seem familiar? I played this on iPad a while back. So yes, the first one is available. So yeah, the second one is going to be premium, just like the other releases of it. £6.99, $6.99, which isn't too bad. If you've not played the second version of it, you get a whole bunch of extra stuff. So the prisons are now multi-leveled, the challenges are harder, and you can have local multiplayer. Up to three friends can participate. You can pre-order it right now if you want to, and that is to be released at the end of January. Escapist 2. Out and about this week, Forged Fantasy is probably one of the more interesting games of the week. I happen to have played it a bunch myself for the review that's just gone live on Pocket Gamer. Now, you played Hero Hunters, didn't you?
Yes, I believe I reviewed Hero Hunters as well. Apparently. Someone's told me that I did. I don't remember.
Okay, I will look forward to the lawsuit. I asked that because this is developed by the same folks. Hothead Games is the name. And Forged Fantasy has a lot in common with Hero Hunters. And the idea that it's an action RPG, but it's like a mid-core in-betweeny one, where you do have control over what's going on. You do have control over the combat. If you want to, you can auto play it if you want to. Not that I did, because I am hashtag real gamer. Ugh. I have to kill myself now. That's what I have to do. What a shame. No, you have the option to do it if you want to, if you're going back and grinding or whatever. But if you don't want to and you want to actually participate and hack and slash with your fingers and then shoot your arrows with your thumbs and all the rest of the business, you can do that as well. It's entirely up to you. It's surprisingly fun. Surprisingly quickly, which I remembered from Hero Hunters. So the reason that the game feels a lot more dynamic than some action RPGs, so in many ways it's similar to the turn-based stuff where you have the three versus three lined up on the screen and you will take it in turns to trade blows. Because you are managing a group of initially like one or two people, you end up with five at the end and then you're swapping out different characters as you unlock them. But the principle's the same. Little instances, they charge into battle, you fight, you fight, you fight, you win, you get three stars, then you get upgrades and all that business. But instead of it being turn-based, it's happening in real time. And you're flicking between the characters at will. So you've got portraits of the characters in the top left, and you can just tap on them, and it's all played out in third person. And you can just jump between each individual character and then start playing as them immediately. So if you are your big action aggro tank dude, he's got a big sword at the front, and you can just start slashing away and unleashing some special moves that he has. Or then you just tap the portrait and you jump over to your bowman, your archer, who then starts picking them off because he's way back. The camera kind of goes and flies back to wherever he is. And then likewise, you've got your mage character, jump over to them, do some healing, send out some fireballs or whatever. So the combat ends up feeling very dynamic and cinematic, I guess. Hate that word for games, but it is, because the camera's constantly roaming around and flitting between characters if you want it to. And that makes it feel very alive and vibrant. Now, you can just stand back and let the game play itself, or you can just maybe, I like this character, I like the archer, for example, and you can just play through the whole thing playing the archer and let the other guys take care of themselves. But it does pay to jump between them a little bit, I found, if you want to get all three stars and take stuff out really quickly. Especially if someone's running low and you need to jump to your healer to make sure they definitely heal that character before they get taken out or something like that. So you end up with a bit of nuance and control over what's going on. The reason I said it was fun very quickly is because a lot of these games, these ARPGs, they are more generous at the front, but it still feels like a grind right from the beginning, I always think, with these games. And I kind of get put off by the, oh, this is going to take ages, isn't it? This is going to take months. And I don't have time for another one of these. This one, within about like 3 hours, you had like a full roster of five characters plus some spare characters. You'd leveled up a lot and it felt like you were really getting somewhere.
Mm.
which might just be the illusion of we're putting bigger numbers, you know, at, up front, and it gives you that feeling that maybe you're getting somewhere. But I'd fired through, like, you know, three entire worlds of like 15 levels a piece, and I'd done loads of upgrading, and I've upgraded my own level because characters can be leveled individually, but then you level yourself as well, and you have to balance between the two because your characters can't supersede your own level. So if they're a 9 and you're a 10, you can put them up to 10, but you can't put them up to 11. You need to level yourself. There is a lot of background, different types of XP to earn, gold and chests, and the stuff you would expect from a free-to-play RPG.
It does sound a lot like Hero Hunters.
Yeah. And
I think Hero Hunters did the exact same thing where I remember getting through like 3 chapters in no problem.
Yeah.
And it's just constant progression and winning. And they're only short little battles and stuff, but just that constant sort of feeling of I am making progress.
Yes.
And like not hitting the grind too early. It was several days before I actually started having to stop and repeat levels and stuff like that. The one question I have about this, how does the melee combat work? Because none of that was in Hero Hunters. It was all guns.
Yeah, it was guns, wasn't it? So the melee fighter, it's just he just charges up to nearest characters or whatever, and then you're controlling the attacks that he does. So you can tap on the big button to do just standard big old sword swipes, or as you progress and level the characters, you unlock like additional powers which cool down. So you can then occasionally throw a massive, great big flaming sword smash in, but then you'll have to wait like 15 seconds to do it again.
Yeah.
Because there are some characters up front giving it melee and some out back which are hiding. You have that nice switching between them. So say the character's constantly flying backwards and forwards, and it feels like you really are jumping around the battlefield. It's not super heavyweight, but at the same time, there's a bit more going on than your average just like grind-a-thon, sit there and watch everyone do everything for you. So I quite liked it for an example of this genre. In the same way that we quite liked that first game, we thought that Hero Hunters was quite surprisingly decent, and it feels quite vibrant and vital and has lots of energy in it. And I feel a lot of these games can be quite flat and stagnant.
Mm.
So for that reason, we broadly recommended it and think it was pretty good. So there's a video review if you want to learn more and see some later characters, and a written review over on PG as well. Forged Fantasy is the name of that one. Let's jump over to your side of the fence, by which I mean switchy action. What have you been playing / reviewing?
So the biggest game of the week would be Travis Strikes Again, No More Heroes, which is the third entry in the series, although it's kind of not, it's more of a spin-off type thing. have you ever played the No More Heroes games?
I've never played No More Heroes. This is going all the way back to the Wii, and this is the dude with the mad like strip light / lightsaber thing.
Yeah.
And this is Suda, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a classic Suda 51. This is like, yeah, this is post Killer 7, which I think really cemented his style, and then he kind of went to the other end of ridiculousness with it, with No More Heroes, because it was just violent and bloody and stupid, and you had to do like boring tasks like fill up gas and work a checkout and all that kind of stuff to like be able to move on through the game.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant at the time, and like the humor is I think it probably still holds up. I haven't played it in a very, very long time, and I would love to. So this one, I was really excited for it because I love No More Heroes and I love the character, and it's crap. It's really, really bad.
Oh, really?
I ended up giving it a 6 out of 10, spoilers for the review, but I thought it was fun in places and I wanted to love it because of the style, but basically... So the old games were sort of hack and slash, but it was a third-person view, and there was a bunch of different mechanics going on underneath it all. This one is a top-down hack and slash, sometimes side-on hack and slash, and it's really simple mechanics. You press a basic attack to do basic attack, or you can hold it to do a constant basic attack. There's a strong attack, and then you get a special move, and there's other skills that you can deploy as well. And like, it's not difficult in the slightest. It's so easy. Even just to hold down the basic attack and kill everything just by hitting them like over and over again. The twist on it is that you're being yanked into various games within the game kind of thing.
Mm.
Very 80s nonsense storytelling. And so in the different games, you'll have a different challenge. So in one level, there's a bit where you have to hit some tile-changing blocks, and then the tiles will spin round. You have to create a path for yourself. But eventually, it starts throwing a giant blue head that will eat you and kill you in one hit if you don't dodge its attack fast enough, which is a giant pain in the arse. Or apparently there's a racing level at some point, which is awful, and all this kind of stuff. And they just keep adding mechanics to each world to try and break up the fact that it's just a mediocre hack and slash. And it just... it's really flat and boring, and the characterization, like, Travis is still, I still find some joy in him swearing and the violence and that kind of thing, because I am at my core a stupid teenager.
And sitting on the toilet with his trousers down.
Yeah, of course. But it's just really kind of dull. It just feels like he's run out of ideas at this point.
It's weird, from the videos that I'm watching, it looks like a mobile twin-stick shooter. Like, yeah. Without the shooter, like hack-and-slash thing, but it's that same kind of stripped-down, simple... Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like it should play like that, and then you end up just with the boring hack-and-slash thing. I kept expecting it to have a sort of Nier Automata mechanic where you did the hack-and-slash, but also it was a twin-stick shooter at the same time. Yeah. Which would have been brilliant. They could have just ripped that wholesale, and I would have thought it was a great game. But no, it's just really bland and average. And I think Suda51 has had a few misses in his past few games, and I am waiting for him to bounce back. And this isn't the game that does it, unfortunately.
Okay, that's a shame. Well, so this is a full release, is it? Is it a cartridge as well as digital?
Cartridge as well as digital, I believe it's. I can't remember how much it cost. I think it's £25, $30.
Okay.
And there is a £9 season pass, which will have some extra characters and levels and stuff. But unless you're a massive No More Heroes fan, or you just want some sort of... you just want to kill your brain for a while, I wouldn't recommend it.
Fair enough. So, Travis Strikes Again, getting the slight down vote. I'm looking online and apparently other people are saying similar things.
The Eurogamer review is... it's just a total hatchet job. It is beautiful.
All right, good stuff. Okay. So back to mobile for a minute. Hangline Mountain Climber, which is a free-to-play game which you can download on Android and iOS right now. This is kind of a laugh. So I've played about half an hour or so of it, and it is a hookshot game, a one-touch hookshot game where you play a mountain explorer who is climbing up the side of a snowy mountain. And the idea is that you are dropped off in a helicopter and immediately your hookshot fires out and goes patunk and sticks into the snow. You can only attach your hookshot to snow and some bits of rock sometimes, but there are large areas of the mountain which you can't cling onto. And initially all you're trying to do is get up the mountain. So you just tap anywhere on the screen and the hookshot will fly out and lock onto that bit, provided A, it's within the safe distance. So obviously the hookshot is only so long, you can't fire out from one side of the screen to the other. So it has a range. And you're tapping on the right bit of environment where it can actually latch onto. And that way you make your way, usually up the screen, hopping over from ice chunk to ice chunk to ice chunk. It's nice and elastic in that way, the hookshot stuff is. So the idea is you fire it out and then it kind of whoop, repels upwards. And then if you just leave it there, it'll kind of bounce back down and jump around and, you know, like you're hanging from a bit of elastic rope. As well as making it to the top of the mountain and firing yourself up there to the flag, which is when the helicopter will collect you again. You want to start rescuing people on the way. So initially there might be like three different stranded survivors who are stuck there on the mountain. So you need to find your way over to them. All you need to do is just rappel past them or near them and boop, a hookshot will fly down from the outside of the screen. And it's like it's the helicopter. And I compare it to the Metal Gear Solid. What do they call that thing?
The Fulton.
Fulton, yeah, where it's just like suddenly they go whoom, flying out of the screen. It's like that, which is fun and satisfying. So you need to collect all three and then bang, you can finish the level and get your full stars. So that's like the first bit. Second bit, they hide the survivors in like hard to reach areas because suddenly you'll be forced through tunnels and there'll be a lot fewer places where you can get leverage. And so it then becomes about like hookshotting yourself to the right position and using the momentum to ping your character out and over a chasm so that you can then reach the safe area on the other side. So it starts to become about using the propulsion to navigate the area, which is really good. And then it starts throwing lots of environmental weirdness at you. So you'll start latching onto areas and they start to break after a while. So you hook onto a bit of mountain and suddenly the whole thing will fall away and you have to time when to jump onto the next bit. And then you start getting creatures appearing. So you've got like jaguars or goats, you know, hill goats. You always see those.
Yeah.
There are some of those kicking about and they can get in the way and then you'll get exploding crates and then it all starts going completely mental. It's quite good. it's genuinely like got that fun, satisfying sense of momentum and movement. The elasticity of it is really pleasing. And because you're really only playing it with one hand, portrait mode, one thumb, tap, 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 it becomes about timing and using your momentum well. It's not like super challenging, not within the first like half an hour or so anyway, but it's engaging. I liked it. I'm coming back to it. It's got that nice bounce. So Hangline Mountain Climber is the name of that one. It's free to download. I would give that a look. A couple of things that I haven't really played yet. So Reality Clash. This is this new like AR game.
Yes.
That appeared. What's the deal with this one?
So it's kind of like Pokemon Go in that there are real world locations that you have to take and defend. But to do so, you have to shoot people in the face. And initially, the idea was that you would be sort of looking through the real world and you'd see someone else playing like through your camera and you could shoot them sort of in the real world. Which made me a bit uncomfortable. They've now shifted away from that entirely, and it puts you into a sort of VR environment in the game.
Oh, okay.
So you're still moving the camera around in the real world, but instead of, like, shooting through random passerbys, you are sort of in a separate world within the game kind of thing and doing the shooting.
Okay.
And it's all about cryptocurrency and stuff like that in the game. I don't know if there's blockchain added to it yet, but I'm sure there will be.
And probably is, because that's what I was reading about it, and it's all about you can earn actual money and trade with people and all that.
God. But yeah, you can like craft and upgrade weapons and stuff like that and get cool looking guns. And it looks kind of interesting. It's only actually in soft launch now, so it's Australia, Denmark and New Zealand. And they are slowly rolling it out across the rest of the world. There hasn't been an official worldwide release date yet, but they are still, I believe the plan is to just kind of start rolling it out.
Gotcha.
Rather than have an extended soft launch period as we would expect. But yeah, we're going to get our hands on it at PGC London next week.
Yes.
So the developers will be there and they're going to come around and show us a build. So we'll have more on that next week, I imagine.
Yes, if this show is slightly shorter this week and the next week's show, we all sound like we're dead. That's why PGC is happening next week. Pocket Gamer Connects London, which is our biggest show of the year, which this year is even bigger than it was before. And I think we're going to run out of building space. And I'm scared, Rick. It's going to be so huge and I'm scared. But it's good. If you are the listener and you're at PGC, come and swing by. I'll be on the top floor doing interviews and grabbing footage and all that kind of business like usual. And you'll be at the journalist bar. So
I'll be at the journalist bar and you can come and show us your game after 2 p.m. We are booked up in the morning, but after 2 p.m. it's a free-for-all. So if you have a game and you want to come show it to us and you're going to be there, swing by. I'll be there. Harry will be there. We'll say nice things about your game, probably.
Nice. So, other thing I've played this week is Kaiju Rush, which is another sort of casual, very daft one-touch game, which is, you know that mode in Trials where you just slam into the wall and you see how far your character can ragdoll down a massive hill of crates and that?
Yes.
So, it's that, but it's top-down, it's pixel art, and you're dealing with massive monsters, kaiju-style. So the idea is you start at the beginning of the game and you've got a little arrow that's wanging backwards and forwards, and it's effectively a power meter. Mm. And you have to tap it at the right point, and that determines how strong your throw is. And your kaiju is basically launched into the air from the bottom of the screen up to the top, and you see a big map of a city. And as he's launched into the air, a circle appears on the ground that grows as he goes into the air, and then as he travels back down towards the ground, it shrinks. And the idea is you need to tap the screen at the moment the circle is at its biggest, and that's its maximum height, and you will effectively power slam down onto the city, smashing everything that is below you. And you need to keep doing that. So it's like bounce, bounce, bounce. And if you pick the exact moments, you will bounce longer, and you will smash harder, and you will get further. And eventually, after a while, it loses momentum, and doof, 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 doof. And then the kaiju will sort of stand up and go, bah. And then that's the end of your level. And you see how far you can get. So it determines what rating you get, how the distance you travel, and also how much stuff you've smashed up. And every time you smash everything, you collect these kind of radioactive tokens, which you can then use to unlock more kaiju and upgrade things and bits and pieces. It's very simple, but it's sweet. It's nicely presented, and all the kaiju are cute. So it's like these like sweet versions of Godzilla and Mothra and King Kong and all that, which is kind of adorable. It's obviously super lightweight and it's pushing like free upgrades and do this and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you have to cook eggs. So you unlock eggs for your character and, you know, you can unlock them immediately and the stuff you'd expect. You can just remove ads from the game, though. It's not like super free to play horrible. $2.99 gets rid of all the ads. Other than that, you don't have to really pay anything. And it's just that simple, like, smashing stuff. Smashing stuff's good, isn't it? Nothing special, but at the same time, it's not offensive and it's kind of cute. And if you like collecting monsters, I hear there's a market for that.
monsters in your pocket.
In your pocket, yeah. I hear
how
that.
Bizarre.
Is that all right? So you might like it there. So it is just called, let me just get the title right. Kaiju Rush is the name of that one. So free to download iPhone, iPad right now. What's the other Switch thing? You've been doing more Switch.
It is a game called Y2K, a postmodern RPG.
Oh my.
Stylized as Yik, so it's Y-I-I-K, if you are going to look into it.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's been in development for years and years and years, and I follow the developer on Twitter, and it's like a very small team who've been making it. I think it's a team of brothers, and they had some serious like family problems and stuff like that, and you can kind of tell that it's been put into the game as well, like the sort of heartbreak and stuff like that. And I think that's possibly why I'm getting more out of it than I think other bigger sites have seen. I've seen some other reviews and they're all just kind of like, oh, the character's insufferable, I hate the story and this kind of thing. And I think I'm getting more out of it because I've followed it for so long and it's so close to me and I feel, you know, in sort of entrenched with it.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a story about a hipster in 1999 called Alex. He's an insufferable, horrible person who you have to play as. And apparently he has no redemption arc, so good. Have fun with that.
Okay.
And he follows a cat into the woods, and then suddenly there's a Korean girl who gets kidnapped into another world. There's people traveling in from other dimensions. There's giant space beings called entities who might actually be your soul, and they're out to kill you, and everyone's going crazy and killing themselves. It's really, really weird. And it's kind of a classic turn-based RPG, except it's got the Super Mario RPG, Paper Mario style rhythm action combat systems.
Oh, right. Okay.
So, and every character has their own completely different way of attacking people. So Alex has a record player that spins around. You have to hit the attack button within certain colored sections. Mm. Or there's a guy who like pulls out a sword and you've got to land a line on the right part of the sword, which changes every attack and this kind of thing. Combat isn't great, which is unfortunate because that's a big part of an RPG, mostly because the timings are slightly off in things, and because it's rhythm based, you'll just mess up things all the time until you start like working against the system and against your own brain to make it work.
What you mean, like there's a lag or latency?
Yeah, there's a bit of a lag. So like, you'll hit the button and then there'll be a fraction of a second of lag, and some of the timings are so precise that you'll just miss it completely. And you can see the dot where it should be because it's like a crosshair on a certain thing at times. Basically, like the main issue is the blocking system is there's a crosshair that comes down a line on the side, and there's an orange bit which if hit that you'll get an extra bit of defense, so you'll halve damage. And then there's a tiny red line underneath that, where if you hit that, you'll dodge the attack completely. So obviously you want to go for that one. But when you're starting out, you'll hit it, you'll try and press the button as it lands on the red mark, and it'll just dunk underneath, and you'll miss it completely and take huge amounts of damage. And you can see it, sometimes you'll land it perfectly, and you'll see it jump just down a bit. And it'll still be within, but you can be like, ah, I know it's lagging now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's really disappointing. There's a leveling system as well where you have to like go to a phone and go into your own mind dungeon, and then you've got to assign a stat to a room and then walk into the room and do that for four rooms, and then you can move down to the next level. It takes ages, and it could have just been done with a menu, and it's really frustrating. And it feels there for the sake of it kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And load times are a problem as well. Loading into battles takes ages. Loading out of battle takes ages. Loading into a new section takes ages. It's just, ugh. It kind of is an unpleasant experience, but I love it so much because, I know it sounds like a negative review, but it's because I want to get out all the problems out of the way. Because I love this game, and I feel
this
like
is because of what the story.
The story is brilliant. I think. It's really deep and dark and horrible, and it goes from, like, sort of gentle silliness to overall what the hell is happening ridiculousness to I watched my sister kill herself darkness. Like, it just jumps between these different tones, and it does it kind of well, and it calls itself out when it's being pretentious and stupid, and your character gets called out by other characters for being an asshole, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's a nice feeling as well, that, like, you have a terrible character, but other characters know that he's terrible. He doesn't entirely get away with it.
Okay.
The graphics are amazing. It's very low poly, jerky, sort of Nintendo 64 art style. But, like, it's full of garish bright colours, and it's just sort of weird and wacky. Everything you do is just a bit off and a bit weird, and there's just this weird tension running through the whole thing. And I don't know, I really, really love it.
Is it something where you could put all the combat on easy mode and just, like, try and breeze through it?
No. That's no? the unfortunate thing. You, like, there's not many battles in the game, and you can avoid them if you want to, but you do need to level up to face the bosses, and the battles can take forever, even when you're leveled up, because everything levels up with you. So you never get to a point where you're trashing enemies, you're just always slightly better than them, kind of thing. So that's a bit disappointing as well. There's no way to just blaze through and focus on the story. You do have to sort of suffer the consequences of playing the game.
Oh.
So I appreciate it's not going to be for everyone. I've seen a lot of negative response to it, which is fair. I totally agree with that. But for me, personally, I have absolutely loved playing it. I wouldn't say every second of it, but I have absolutely loved going through, exploring, finding out more, talking to random NPCs and stuff like that. The writing, I think, is beautiful. The soundtrack also, I haven't mentioned, it's absolutely fantastic. If they release that by itself, that is worth a purchase on its own, because it is just so good and varied and interesting. And yeah, it's a shame, because it's got so many negative things that I think could be easily fixed. It's not necessarily a design flaw, it's just a performance issue.
Okay.
But, yeah.
And well, do you recommend it?
I would heartily recommend it. I would say if you are looking for sort of a weird, lengthy RPG to lose yourself into, if you sort of forgive it its sins, it will, you know, and just sort of embrace the weirdness, I think you'll get a lot out of it. And it's only £18, $20 on the eShop, so it's not even a huge money investment to get into it. So if you are looking for something, it's about 30 hours long, I believe. If you're looking for something that you can lose yourself in, and you don't mind having to go through some crummy combat and stuff like that, I think it's well worth checking out.
Okay, so that's Yik, and Postmodern RPG for your Switch. We'll just mention that there are a couple of other things out on iOS and Android. So Rangers of Oblivion is out, which is a more standard third-person hack-and-slash ARPG. It looks very much like the stuff that you've seen a lot. It's trying to go for the photorealistic graphics and the big dragons and everything. Haven't played it. Free to play. You can go and give that one a look if you want to. And there is a big old shmup which has appeared called Space Justice. I think this one is also free. I always mention the shmups because I do have a soft spot for them, and I think they work well when you have that one touch, you know, just slide your thumb around, one-to-one control. It's one of the genres that works brilliantly on touchscreens, and it's been very nicely animated and all that business, but don't know how it plays. You can try it and find out for yourself. Space Justice is the name of that one, free on iOS and on Android. That'll do for the week. Hey. We will be back in some form next week, just probably sounding a little bit shagged out after our conference. Hope to see you there if you're a listener and you are attending. Do drop by and say hi. And in the meantime, go grab one of those games. Enjoy your week. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.